Let's get moving. It's 10:31, not just 10:30. And a half. Sorry. My apologies. Good thing we had daylight savings. Okay. So, welcome to Kayin Zman. It's wonderful that we have people going from Malachas of Shabbos into Muktzah and not being scared of finding out all the things that we are doing wrong.
Scared?
We're
scared.
Oh, you are scared.
I'm scared.
Yeah, but not scared off. At any rate.
Not scared off.
See, it was a lot easier when we're doing ribbis because I don't lend anybody money. It's a big deal. You have to get to a certain level in order for ribbis to be a concern. but when you get to Hilchos Shabbos, it's a whole other story. So we are avoiding the following, at least in this shiur and probably in most of the shiurim, if not all of the shiurim through this man, and that we are avoiding the whole set of issues involved in muktzah for Yom Tov, meaning that's its own bria. It interacts with and intersects with what we're going to be talking about for Shabbos, but we're going to have a hard enough time finishing Shabbos muktzah in Kayin Zman. And again, yontif references will creep in. The word muktzah itself means what?
Set aside.
That's the trick, right? Is it that it is designated for non-use, or that it has not been designated for use? And that I'm going to leave to Rabbi Ziering, who's doing the conceptual introduction next week, God willing. So that's going to be part of the conceptual underpinnings of muktzah discussion for the next year. But the key thing to understand is that muktzah includes items which are not meant for use on Shabbos, and as a result, we're not supposed to handle them or use them in particular ways on Shabbos. On Shabbos, I'm not supposed to handle and make use of items which are not meant for use that day. Now, there's a lot to talk about, obviously. That's just the tip of the iceberg, but I say that because, you know, it is important to get our definitions right in terms of what the word muktzah means. I gave you, as the first sheet, a quick outline of categories and issues, which I'm just going to run through very quickly, just so that we know what we're talking about, superficially. So, first of all, types of muktzah. I broke this down into three different types. There are so many different ways to divide them up. I find this set of distinctions useful. First of all, items that are not useful when Shabbos starts. So, nolad. The item did not exist in this form before Shabbos. Right? You took a block of wood and turned it into a kli, or a non-Jew turned it into a kli, so it wasn't done in violation of Shabbos, but now you have a kli. But it wasn't a kli when Shabbos started. Right? Debates about newspapers. Does a newspaper have the status of nolad? The ink existed, the paper existed, but it wasn't a newspaper until they printed it Friday night. So, something along those lines. Nolad. Mukta machmas gufo. Something that has no function. There's a rock. Right? It has no use. It wasn't designated. We'll talk about designation. So also, wasn't useful when Shabbos started. Muktzah machmas iser. Its use is prohibited, and it's not a kli. So for example, chametz on Pesach. It has no use for me that day. And then, along with it, kli shemalachto leiser, you have a kli, a utensil, an implement, which is used for something that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. And yes, of course, there may be a permitted function as well. What if it's majority prohibited, minority permitted? You have scissors as a classic example of that, a hammer as another example of that. You could use the hammer to smash nuts, you could use the scissor to cut a string in a permitted way. So those are kli shemalachto leiser cases. These are all types of items which weren't useful when Shabbos started, as opposed to items that were useful, but you wouldn't use them, or normal people would not use them. So muktzah machmas mius, you have something that is disgusting and repellent. It has a function, but no one's ever going to pick it up. Dawi muktzah machmas mius. Muktzah machmas chisaron kis, something that people don't handle because it is fragile and they would suffer a loss if something were to happen to it. That requires a lot of discussion. What is its normal use in usher use? Is its normal use in mutter use? What defines loss? What defines I wouldn't use it? Right? The classic example. You have a beautiful cloth megillah, right? But it's expensive and you usually keep it away behind glass. So is it muktzah on Shabbos? Muktzah machmas mitzvah. You have something that is designated for a particular mitzvah use. Right? Your esrog on Sukkot is designated for use for the Arba Minim. would be a potential example of mutza machmas mitzvah. Buses ledavar ha'asur, something that is being used to support a prohibited item. You put your pen down on it intentionally before Shabbos. Intent is part of the discussion about buses. That's another example. And then your third category is really just one item. It's not really a category. And that's an item that is asur only because there is a gzeira against handling it, and that's klishim lachto leheter. You have a kli, you have a utensil that is used for permitted purposes. There may be an issue, if you saw the Gemara already on this, you know what I'm talking about. The Gemara on Kuf Mem Beis, sorry, Kuf Mem Beis, on Kuf Chaf Gimel, there may be a prohibition against handling cups, spoons, whatever, if I'm not handling it for use. Just I'm sitting at the table and now I decide to pick it up and play with it. That's a classic question. Is this a problem of handling a klishim lachto leheter inappropriately? So those are your three categories. It wasn't useful when Shabbos started. It was useful, but you wouldn't use it. And then this klishim lachto leheter, for which there may be a gzera against handling it for reasons we will discuss. How is muktza status conferred or removed from an item? So by default, muktza status is received ben hashmashos when Shabbos begins. The classic line, migo diskatzoi ben hashmashos iskatzoi l'chule yoma. It becomes muktza when Shabbos starts, and now remains muktza for all of Shabbos, meaning even if the reason for its muktza status disappears, it is still muktza. So for example, you had an item that was a busis. There was a muktza item on top of it when Shabbos started. The muktza item rolled off, blew off by the wind, whatever it is in the course of Shabbos. The busis is still usur for the remainder of Shabbos. That's the basic principle. However, there is something called gomro bidei adam. What if there is a permitted way to cause the reason for the muktzah status to disappear during Shabbos? There's something you could do that would end it. So maybe from before Shabbos, it doesn't become automatically muktzah for the rest of Shabbos. When you eliminate the muktzah generating condition, then the muktzah status may well disappear. Right? I'm not talking about... Well, you know, let me not talk about what I'm not talking about. That's better. It's confusing enough as it is. There are ways to eliminate muktza status before Shabbos starts. I mentioned here too. Hachanaso kodem Shabbos. What if you prepare it for use before Shabbos? I have a rock, and I want to use it as a doorstop. Right? I had occasion recently to be in a hospital over Shabbos. So you want to be able to get in to the hospital without triggering all the funny doors and whatever else. So there's a certain door which the smokers use. The smokers prop it open with a rock all the time. So you go there on Friday, you put the rock in place to keep the door propped open. You have now created a security hazard for the hospital. Ask your rabbi whether you're allowed to do that. But you designate that rock so that upon Shabbos, somebody kicks it out of the way. You can then go back and put it in place because you have designated this rock before Shabbos. This is a doorstop. Hachanaso kodem Shabbos. Which items can be designated that way is a very good question. Animals, for example, the classic issue of whether animals, like a pet, can be designated that way for use on Shabbos, that even though animals are normally muktzah, maybe the animal is not muktzah now. The other way is tnai b'muktzah. What if you declare that the muktzah condition will be temporary? You say, let's say, muktzah machmas mitzvah. It's muktzah because it's designated for use for a particular mitzvah. It's schach for my sukkah. But what if I say on Friday, it's only going to be schach in the morning. At 11 a.m. I'm going to stop using it as schach. I make a condition. So is that a way that I can actually eliminate a status? These are two different things. Right? The first one is hachana, I make it non-muktzah from the start of Shabbos. The other one is I say, I am planning on ending that which made it muktzah at a certain point during Shabbos. That's in terms of eliminating muktzah status before Shabbos starts. The other is conveying muktzah status on Shabbos. You can make an item muktzah on Shabbos. And if you do, you could be violating bitul kli mehechano. You're taking a kli, a utensil, if it is one, and making it non-usable on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to do it. The Rambam says it's like soser, it's like destroying the kli. Classic case, there's a leak in your roof on Shabbos, and you want to put a bucket underneath it to catch the leak, but the water that's dripping in there is not usable water. It's not water that you would use for any function. Are you allowed to put a bowl or a pail underneath the leak? You're being mevatel kli mehechano. That's a classic question that comes up in this regard. However, if you confer muktzah status on Shabbos, and then the reason for the muktzah status disappears, then we say ein muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. an item does not become now mukta for the rest of Shabbos because it had it temporarily. If it was mukta when Shabbos started, that would persist no matter what happens for the rest of Shabbos. But let's take the leak case. Let's pretend that we've decided that when the water falls into the pail, the pail is now mukta. Along comes somebody, Jewish, non-Jewish, whatever it was, and doesn't know what's going on. They see water in the pail. They dump the water out of the pail. Now there's no water in the pail anymore. So now it loses its mukta status. Even though it became mukta on Shabbos when the water was in it, now it loses the status. That's the issue of mukta l'chatzi Shabbos. Also something worth knowing. Are we somewhat clear on what I'm saying? I know I'm rushing through it, but I'm just trying to give a sense of what the playing field is in our discussion. So we've done the categories of mukta. We've done how mukta status is conferred or removed. And then the last bit is which types of handling are prohibited or permitted when dealing with mukta items. So eating mukta is prohibited, and that's actually perhaps the most basic form of mukta, according to Chasam Sofer, that it's if it may be a de'oraisa from the month. You have to prepare your food before Shabbos. You're not allowed to eat mukta food on Shabbos. Moving mukta items is the one people usually think about. There are different ways to move an item. Not all ways to move an item are the same. Clearly, moving it directly, you pick something up and move it, is moving an item. But there's also something called tiltul begufo, moving an item indirectly with your body. The Gemara in Shabbos Guf Mem Aleph talks about moving straw with your body, the back of your hand, with your leg, as one example. And then there's tiltul min hasad. What if you move it via another item? So there are crumbs on my Shabbos table, and I sweep them off using a little broom, as opposed to using my hand. That's tiltul min hatzad. Tiltul begufo, tiltul min hatzad, may be permitted at times when regular tiltul, regular movement of mukta items is not permitted. The last item here is touching an item that is mukta without actually moving it. So you've probably heard somebody say at some point, there's nothing wrong with touching mukta items, the problem is only with moving them. You can touch a car, you can whatever, you're just not allowed to move it. That's often true. However, there is the Yerushalmi in Beitza, which says that you're not allowed, you have to be careful if you're going to cover an egg, because you don't want it to get broken. If you want to cover an egg with a kli, don't let the cover touch the egg. Don't let the cover touch the egg. I'm not moving the egg. So the Nagid Mishnah says it's because the egg moves very easily, and therefore you may end up moving it. However, the Trimas Hadeshin says it's because your contact is for the sake of the mukta item. You're doing it to take care of the mukta item, and maybe touching a mukta item for the sake of taking care of it is a problem. This comes up on Shabbos. You have certain light switches, perhaps, that you keep covered on Shabbos, because you know people instinctively turn them on or off. Right? You notice Shabbos started, you notice that you didn't cover it. Are you allowed to put a cover on top of the switch? It may touch the switch in the course of doing so. Not flipping it, but touching it. Is that an issue? The answer is you're fine. But that's a question that comes up. Within this issue of handling mukta items, I gave you a quick list of two types of justifications for handling mukta. One, those that are for the sake of the mukta item. If you touch it to prevent it getting stolen, not touching, handling it, to prevent it getting stolen, to get it out of a situation where the elements may harm it, it's out in the sun, it's going to be left in the rain. Kavod Ames is a unique category where somebody passed away. We'll see the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed about that. But there's a dead body. Are you able to move it in certain ways in order to bring it to protection? Sar Bali Chayim, what if the mukta item is an animal? But it's in pain where it is. So those are justifications potentially for handling mukta items in certain ways for the sake of the mukta item. Sometimes, though, the justification is for the sake of the person himself. So, tzarach gufo, you move the mukta item in order to use it in a permitted way. Tzarach mekomo, for the sake of using the space where the mukta item is. Graf shel re, you move it because it's repellent where it is and your room is unusable because you're disgusted by it when you walk into the room. Nezek l'rabim, in order to prevent harm for people, right? A glass broke. So the pieces of glass that are on the ground are now dangerous to people. Maybe you can move them even though they're mukta because they pose a threat. And lastly, kavod abrios. Moving it for the sake of human dignity, being able to move mukta items for the sake of a person's dignity. So those are just, again, this is just pure overview, but frankly it will probably be useful, we were talking about this before, as a way to set up our shiurim for the rest of this month. I'm not arrogant enough to think that we're just going to now be able to go down the sheet and say, now we've done it. Generally speaking, when we start a limud, I have one conception of where we're going, and then actually start learning it and realize, no, we can't do it that way at all. You forgot all these other things. So we'll see. But at any rate, this may give us a framework and define some terms which we're going to be using a lot in the course of the in the course of this month. Good? Okay, let's talk muktzah. The origin of the laws of muktzah. So muktzah is universally treated. When I say universally treated, it means everybody says that it's a derabanan. Right? People talk about muktzah as a derabanan, but it's not so clear cut. Take a look at source Aleph, please. Gemara in Pesachim Mem Zayin Amud Beis in the position of Rabba. Previous to the start of the piece that I excerpted here, Rava has presented the argument of Ho'il, that you're allowed to do certain things on Shabbos, you're allowed to do certain things on Yom Tov, because guests may come and use them. So, Esvei Abaye, Abaye challenges Rava. He says, we learn, Hamavashal Gidanosha Bechelev Bechalov, excuse me, Beyom Tov, Vaochlo. If you cook Gidanosha on Yom Tov in milk, why did you do it? Because you wanted to get your name in the Gemara. But you cook Gidanosha in milk on Yom Tov, and then you ate it. So you get five sets of Malkos, one of which is Havara. You lit a fire. So, Abaye says, I don't understand. The fire could be useful. Right? You could have guests show up and you need to cook something for them. Not get anasha preferably. So why is that an issue? So their answer, after going through a different iteration, first they say, apik havara va'ayel atse muktzah. You're right. It wasn't that there was a lo sase for lighting a fire. There was a lo sase for using muktzah wood. Well, if you're getting malkos, that must mean that this is a de'oraisa. Umukta de'oraisa? You think mukta is a de'oraisa? Amar lay in. And Rabbah says, you bet. Where? The man. Dichsiva. Yava yameshishi vechinu es asher yaviyu. Because the tzivu was given. The command was given that on Friday you had to prepare that which you were going to use on Shabbos. And the azhara for it, because if you're going to get malkos, you need a lo sase and an azhara. You need a repeated warning in the Torah. Yeah, the Torah says lo sase chomalacha. That counts. That includes muktzah. Then the Gemara goes on and seems to drop this idea. However, Rashi thinks that Rabbah did not drop this idea. Source Beis is a very important Gemara for muktzah from the beginning of the Maseches Beita, dealing with the egg that was laid on Yom Tov. The Mishnah says that your egg that's laid on Yom Tov is aser, right? Machlokes Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, that whole discussion. Beis Hashanol de Yom Tov. So Rabbah says the case in that Mishnah is betarnegoles haomedes la'achila ubiyom tov shechalios achar haShabbos. He says that case is where the egg was laid by a chicken that was meant for eating, and therefore it was part of food. Right, the chicken was perceived as food from beforehand, and it's a yom tov that occurs on a Sunday. So what's going on? Mishum hachana. The issue involved here is that the egg was not properly prepared in advance because Yom Tov can't be used as a preparation day for Shabbos. And in the course of this discussion, Rabba Latame, the Gemara says, that's Rabba's view in general, because Rabba says, Vaya b'yameshishi v'echinu es asher yaviyu, that on Friday you have to prepare for Shabbos. Only a Friday is a weekday. Chol can be used to prepare for Shabbos. Yom Tov cannot be used to prepare for Shabbos. That's the Gemara. On that Gemara, we get source Gimel. Rashi says, what is Rabba's Shita? What is Rabba Latameh? From Sachem, V'yalef mehacha de muktzah de oraisa. That Rabba deduces from this pasuk that muktzah is in fact a de'oraisa. Not only that, but it shows up in the Shi'iltos in source. Dalit, in the interests of time, I'm not going to read out every source that we have on the sheet, but Shi'iltos has the same exact idea that from Ve'echinu es asher yaviyu, we should say that muktzah is a de'oraisa. In fact, Tosfo says that can't be, right? I mean, we know muktzah is a derabanan. What are you inventing here? So take a look at source Hay, where Tosfo says, "V'rashi pirish v'beisa deraba latame da'amar ali be be'elu over the muktzah d'oraisa mehai kro." He quotes you Rashi saying that Rabba says muktzah d'oraisa from that pasuk of Ve'echinu es asher yaviyu v'lo nehira, but he says it can't be. It doesn't seem right. V'od the mashma hasam d'hader be, and the Gemara Pesachim sounds like he recanted. So what do we do? So three answers. I didn't bring you the first two answers on the sheet. The first two answers are from the Pnei Yoshua in two different places. The Pnei Yoshua in Shabbos Mem Dalad says that Rashi doesn't mean it's actually Del Raisa, it's an Asmachta. Doesn't sound like it. That's what he said. Yalef Me'acha, the books of Del Raisa. Doesn't that sound like Asmachta? But that's one answer. In the beginning of Beitza, the Pnei Yehoshua gives a different answer. That Rava's only saying that the most severe form of Mukta, going back to our list, the most severe form of Mukta is that which is completely unusable before Shabbos. Nolad, in other words. So Nolad, that's Del Raisa. And Rava never backed down from that. That's what Pnei Yehoshua says in the beginning of Beitza. And then you have the Chasam Sofer and the Netziv, who present an additional idea. And I brought you the Chasam Sofer here in Source Vav. He says, Shnei Minei Mukta Yesh. There are two different kinds of Mukta. Echad la'achila, ve'echad la'tiltul. There is Mukta for eating, and then there is Mukta for handling. Umukta la'achila, hu karov la'de'oraisa, o de'oraisa mamush. He says, in terms of not eating Mukta, that is biblical or quasi-biblical from this pasuk. Asmuchu akrab ayavim ashishi ve'chinu es asher yaviyu. That, he says, is the de'oraisa. Whereas, the last line of Chasam Sofer, Hasheni Mukta Latiltul. The other kind is Mukta for handling, Ein Bo Isser Del Raisa. That's not a Del Raisa, that's Nechemya, which we see in the Gemara about the people who are not treating Shabbos seriously. So the Chasam Sofer's position, and the Netziv, commenting on the She'iltos in Bishalach that I quoted here for you in Dalid, the Netziv in his first Ha'ara on that She'iltos, I didn't want to retype it here, says that the Del Raisa is regarding eating, as opposed to Tiltul, which is a Dirabanan. And there's support for this from a Gemara in Shabbos, Kufchav Chesamad Aleph, where Rav is strict regarding eating Muktzah, but lenient regarding handling it. So, what emerges is that I have a Gemara that seems to say, well, no, it says explicitly, that Rav has a source, a biblical source for Muktzah. Rav seems to back down. However, the She'iltos, and at least some Rishonim, think that there is some element of De'oraisa involved in Muktzah, which the Pnei Yehoshua in Beitza says may refer to Nolad, but which the Chasam Sofer and the Netziv say could be eating Muktzah items, regardless of which kind of Muktzah item it is. So it would appear. A second approach that also renders this as quasi-biblical is seen in the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan I brought you here in Source Zion, it talks about the concept of Shabbaton, which the Ramban is famous for developing. The idea of Shabbaton is that you are supposed to create, the Rabbanan I should say, are supposed to create Shavuos. They are supposed to create certain protections for the laws of Shabbos, and it's considered part of the biblical mandate of creating Shabbaton. And so the Aruch HaShulchan says, that's where Muktzah fits in. If you take a look at Zion, Dinei Kvar Biyanu Bereish Simen Reishmim Gimel Deshvusei Shabbos Einan Domos L'choli Surei Derabbanan Ve'en Kimi De'oraisa. He says, we argue that Shavuos, the Derabbanans of Shabbos, are not like normal Isurei Derabbanan. They're actually like they are De'oraisa as a fulfillment of Tishbos, that you shall halt. He then goes on to bring you the Ramban in the second paragraph in Zion, and that he uses to explain the Rambam's explanation for what Mukta is all about, which I'm not going to go into right now.
It's an assay then. It's being over an assay.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct. It's an assay, effectively. These are los assays that are somehow michlal assay or something along those lines. In order to ensure that you will fulfill this assay,
so
don't do this.
So how would the malchus fit in with the malchus?
So the question is, can you get malchus for a lava b'michlal assay?
We count a lava also. Los asach chol melacha.
Los asach chol melacha as your azhara for what is originally an assay, though.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, his easy answer would be he's not following Psachim Mem Zayin. He doesn't need to. Jerry.
When the Chasam Sofer says, asmachu akra,
yeah,
he doesn't mean asmachta.
So if he says it's karavla de'oraisa, he means asmachta. If he says de'oraisa mamash, then he does not mean asmachta. Yeah, it's funny the way he did that.
Just going back for one second to the pasuk v'hayavim ashishir chinas shiriyah, isn't pasuk shatir techumen? It's a tova ba'alma because they weren't able to go outside.
So techumen is al yetsa ishmi mekomo.
Oh, that's what they're
yeah. Chumen is al yetsa ishmi mekomo. Yeah.
Okay.
So how does Rav explain then that he said it comes from the Chemi or other Nevi'im? So according to the Aruch HaShulchan.
Right. So if this is a Doraisa, so what in the world are we doing with the with Nechemia?
Aruch HaShulchan would explain that, right? Because that is a
right. He does. He addresses it. I'm going to come back to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Correct. It'll be on your sheet too. Don't worry. But in fact, despite the fact that we have Psachim Mem Zayin and Rashi and the Netziv and the Chasim Sofer, and despite the fact that I have this Aruch HaShulchan based on the Rambam Ramban, and the truth is in the Chilta in Parshas Bo, I noted in Ches, that's really the source for this idea of creating Shavuos as a fulfillment of a De'oraisa. I also noted that it's sort of like the Rambam in Hilchos Avel in Source Test, where he describes all sorts of mitzvos of Chesed, and he says they're all under V'Havdal Areicha Kamocha, but they're all Derabbanans anyway. He calls it Mitzvos Eishal Divreihem. It's a Derabbanan, even though it's a fulfillment of V'Havdal Areicha Kamocha. Nonetheless, pretty much everybody says, of course, Muktzah is a Derabbanan. Take a look at Source Yud. And all the Lamdos is interesting, but at the end of the day, we implement it as a Derabbanan. So this is the classic Gemara in Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer Kol Hakelim Nitalin Chutz Min HaMeser HaGadol V'Yasei Shalom HaChareisha. Rabbi Yossi says you're allowed to move Kelim on Shabbos except for this great big saw and a peg that's used to attach parts of the plow. So the Gemara brings a Brisa to give us a little bit more detail on this topic. And first, the Brisa gives us a list of Kelim that were originally permitted to the exclusion of all Krov Mepsulim, so to speak, the exclusion of all other kelim, meaning Barishona Hayomim Shlosha Kelim Nitalim B'Shabbos. Originally, they said you're only allowed to handle three kelim on Shabbos, and these were kelim which were small and used at your table, a knife used to cut pressed figs, the Zorma Listerun, which from various Mishnah sounds like it was a spork of some kind, it had a spoon on one side and a fork on the other side, or something along those lines. But it was used at your table. Rashi says to remove the Zuma, to remove this, the stuff you didn't want to eat from the food. I'll ask you to retain judgment for yourself. Sagin Kitana Shagabe Shulchan, and the small knife that they used at the table. And then Haitiru Chazri Tiru Chazri Tiru, in the cycle they permitted more Kalim to reach the point of our Mishnah where only two Kalim may not be handled. So the Gemara asks, what in the world are you talking about? What's the cycle of permissions? Amar Abaye Hitiru Davar Shemalachto Lehadir Litzarach Gufo. So Abaye says, first they permitted you to handle items that are used permissibly. If you're going to do it for the use of the Kli itself, then you're fine. So I can pick up the cup to take a drink. Then they permitted Litzarach Makomo to use its space. Then they permitted picking up a klishmach of Yisr, like the scissors, in order to use it for a permitted purpose, but not to use its place. And then it goes through the cycle, one hand, two hands, flip the page onto the next slide. Rava is bothered by Abaye's version of it and presents his own version of what they permitted and then permitted. And then Amra Bichanina Bimeg Nechemia Bechakalia Nishnes Mishnah Zu. Rabbi Chanina says that this Mishnah comes from the days of Nechemia. Dichsiv Bayamim Ahima Raisi Biyehuda Dorchim Gitot B'Shabbat Umviyim Ha'areimot. I saw that the Jews were violating Shabbos. They were trampling the grapes in the wine press. They were bringing their grain in, and I needed to do something about it. And he does what Nehemiah always does, which is he makes rules. When you learn Ezra and Nehemiah, you find out Ezra's reaction to all problems is basically to try to inspire people, and the people then do things. Nehemiah's reaction to problems is to say stop it, and he comes up with a rule and tells you, okay, now you're not doing whatever it was that you were doing before. So that's the way Nehemiah handles the problems of Shemir Shabbos in his day. What's the rationale for the Gezera? What exactly is it that they are preventing here with the Gezera against Muktzah? So one view, which seems to be the view of the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chav Dalet in Source Yid Aleph, is that it was a Gezera to prevent Hotzah. It was a Gezera to keep people from transporting the grapes, from transporting the grain. If we say, don't handle it, then you aren't going to move it. And that's the last line in Source Yud Aleph, where the Gemara has built up. The Gemara is talking about prohibiting certain things on Yom Tov, lest you come to do them on Shabbos. And there's a challenge as part of the discussion, which we're not going to go into right now. But Amor, the last line, Amor Dishamet Leili Beis Shammai Hotzah, all I see in the Mishnah that they quote as part of the discussion, is that Beis Shammai says not to transport without an Eruv, not to transport a child, not to transport a Lulav, not to transport a Sefer Torah into Rishus HaRabim on Yom Tov. That doesn't tell me anything about Tiltul, that I can't move them, just like I can't transport them without an Eruv. Tiltul Mishamalu. To which the Gemara says, the Tiltul Gufe Lav Mishum Hotzahi. Which Rashi explains to mean, and others explain to mean, the Gezerah against Tiltul was meant to prevent Hotzah. Not the act of tiltul is for the sake of hotzah. The gzera of tiltul is for the sake of hotzah. That's the way to read this. And Rashi says it explicitly in Beit Hayyubayz and Aleph in Source Yud Beis. He says
it's tiltul, not touching.
Correct, only moving. Correct. E ain iser hotzah, ain iser tiltul. He says if there's no prohibition against moving, against transporting something, there's no prohibition against handling it. Shelo nesar tiltul ela mishum hotzah, because moving it mukta was only prohibited because of concern that you might come to be motziya, that you might come to transport it. Azoy shteit Rashi, that's what Rashi says. And then the question is, if that's true, then why make a rule of mukta? Don't move anything. Right? Hotzah prohibits transporting everything. Food too. So food should also be motza now. Except you can't do that. Right? So Rashi goes on to say, Yafilu al ochlin v'kelim. Right? Mishum de'en gozim gzera, let's see. Mashalogaz or kol titulim afilu al ochlin v'kelim. Mishum de'en gozim gzera, let's see. Borelim kein robat sibir cholon lamod ba. He says, what are you going to do? We're going to ask her. Everything should now be called motza. Good luck. That's going to fail the test of a gzera that the tzibur can handle.
So if a city has an eruv, can you argue?
No.
There's a low plug? Or
no, there are numerous reasons you can't, but the most basic reason would be, one of the rules in eruvin is you're not allowed to put an eruv that will include the entire residential area, out of concern, lest you, lest people forget eruv. You know, they're just going to assume you can walk around carrying things wherever you like. So once you say that, there's always going to be a space where you're going to have this problem. So
the shot of Nechemia really is not about Hotzah, it's more about Mecher. Isn't it really? Because then it continues, Vatsaram Yashu Bami Ibn Dog Bechal Mecher Mokam Shavas Lov Nehu the Rishmaim, and he closed the gate.
Right, so certainly business was a fundamental problem, but he expresses himself not only in terms of business, but that the transport itself is bothering him. And that's what the Gemara is picking up on. And you will not find a pasuk that says, Nechemia decreed Muktzah. That you will not find. But the statement of Rashi and Tosos on that Rashi is that this is exera to prevent hotzah. The Ravid says the same thing in Sorus Yud Gimel. He quotes that Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chav Dalet. He also quotes the Gemara regarding Nechemia and the three kalim, and he says that it's the concern is for hotzah. That's the concern. They're taking hotzah lightly. Nonetheless, even though that is, it seems, a valid read of the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chav Gimel. The Rambam doesn't seem to care. When the Rambam gets to the laws of Muktzah, he gives us three other explanations for why we have a decree against Muktzah. Take a look at Source Yadalad. The Chachamim said, do not handle some items the way you would during the week. Why? Amru, they said, they told us not to walk on Shabbos like we do during the week. They told us not to talk on Shabbos like we do during the week. Right? Yeshayim, himself chetzcha v'daber davar. Then certainly the way that you handle items should not be the same on Shabbos as it is during the week. I have to admit that this Kal v'chomer sounds a little bit odd to me. In other words, would that have been my extension? Right? I understand what you mean when you say that your speech should be different, and that speech we think of as being a very lightweight thing, and we're shocked even your speech has to be different. When you say to somebody, you shouldn't tell people, I'm gonna drive there. Right, you shouldn't use that phrase. People look at you like you're saying something that was just invented, and no one's ever heard such a thing, even though it's the Gemara. But I wouldn't necessarily have made the leap to say, and therefore handling things is also Asur on Shabbos. That's what he says. You can't handle things on Shabbos, but you handle them during the week. Kedei shelo yeh ki yom chol beinav, so that it won't be like a weekday.
And you cover the Shabbos. What's the meaning behind it?
Well, keep reading. V'yavo lahagbia olatakin kelim mipina lapina mibayis labayis olatzniyavanim. The result of not having a mukta decree is that you would end up picking up, and he adds in fixing, which is funny. We're going to come back to that. It doesn't mean fixing. What he means is adjusting the location, presumably, from one corner to another corner, from house to house. Latzniyavanim, putting stones away he wants to use later. Kiyotzi bohen shareyu batov yoshev beisav. Because what's he doing all day on Shabbos? He's sitting at home. He doesn't have a shear to go to. The Yavakesh Dover, she is Asik Bo, and he's going to look for something to get involved with. People are bored. The Nimsa Shalosh Shabbas, Ubatalatam, Shnemar Batawa, Lamanya Nuach. You're gonna lose Leman Yanuach. You have an imperative of halting your activities on Shabbos, and you won't if you're able to handle and move things. So the Rambam gives you this explanation of differentiating Shabbos from the week, lest you fail to rest.
How does this add to Uta Dechol, though? Like, how's it different?
That's a really good question, and I don't have an answer. Jeffrey asks, how does this interact or relate to Uta Dechol?
We already have that Isser, so.
Right, but we don't really understand Uta Dechol. That's the problem. I don't comprehend Uta Dechol, but I know I'm in good company on this. Uta Dechol is very confusing. Uta Dechol, the idea that you can't engage in certain activities because they are weekday type activities, particularly business oriented activities, does not have clear demarcations.
That'll apply to the non-mukta items.
Presumably. Because everything else is already subsumed under mukta. Unless, well, but I'm confused by the Dechol. So I'm going to leave that confusion for the moment, at least. Adam, yeah.
Doesn't the end here explain the Kal Vachomer? If the whole goal of Mincha Chetzcha and Davar Davar is also to prevent you from ending up doing work and these kind of actions, then it really would make sense that Tiltul should be Asur too.
You mean if we orient all of them towards Leman Yanuach?
Right.
But is that the orientation of the Davar Davar?
Back to the
person,
Rabbi.
That
certainly sounds like what he's saying here.
Is it? I didn't see that. I'm not sure that I would read it that way. I guess because he says that's the Dabar Dabar and therefore Kavah Chomer Shleit Tiltul, but I'm not so convinced that the Dabar Dabar is under Leman Yanuach.
Where do you have it again? If it's not what you're saying, but where do you have this idea that Shabbos should be different? We know it's different for not doing work and all this other stuff, but who says it should be generally different?
Well, the Rambam ties it to a pasuk, to the Man Yanuach.
That's the resting part, okay? But not talking. Why would you change your language and stuff? In other words, it's not. It's Yanuach, not doing Malacha, but there's nothing about being different than anything else. Where does that come from?
Isn't that Zachar? From Zachar, so much opposite.
Well,
that's during the week.
I mean, that or it's you know, Kiddush and Havdalah, beginning and ending demarcations. It sounds like what you'd have to say is that yes, there has to be a recognition on Shabbos that this day is not like the rest of the week. That's why I would have read Mimsochef Sochavadaber Davar.
You'd already do that in all these ways with Gezeiros and looks and all this sort of stuff.
So what are you asking?
So you won't do work,
right?
But that you will rest, but not that it's. I don't see how that answers it.
The talking part.
But it's a different day.
Yeah. I'm saying that's an inherent value. That's an inherent value that Yishai is expressing.
Do we say that on Yom Tov, first of all?
That what?
That your deeper on Yom Tov, it has to be different.
I think so.
Amen.
Do we?
I think so.
Yeah. I just extrapolate to that.
I mean, that's how I understood Mitzvah Chav Dabar Dabar, that it's supposed to be a different day. I didn't understand that as a function of Leman Yanuach. I could be wrong. I have to look closer.
That's part of the target message. Well, what is the category of Leman Yanuach? Is this a...
It's what God told you to do.
Is it a target message?
Is it in the 613? If you can argue that Shavuot Shabbaton is, then yes. That's the question. Is it in the Rambam's list? I don't know.
If it's not, then what's a Gezerah on Eisa Tova or something nice?
You're a Navi. You can do what you like.
Nah. Yishai is the only one who said that, right?
I mean, he's the source for himself.
But there's nobody else who said it.
Well, we're now linking it to Nehemiah. I'm going to go further in the Rambam because there's too much to see, and this is a one-weeker. The Rambam's second point is Va'od. Second concern is, if you're going to handle a kli, which is normally used for prohibited purposes, you may end up doing malacha. And then the third, the Ovid Mipnation Mixas Ha'am Einem Bali Umnius. You know, there are people who don't have jobs. There are people who don't have trades. They don't have crafts that they engage in. Elibatelin Kol Yimeim. They're not engaged in Malacha normally. Kigonet Hayolin V'yoshvei Kronos Shekol Yimein Ein Shosemi Malacha. You have people who travel around, people who just sit in the base medrash. You have people who don't have Malacha to do. V'yiyah Mutter La... That's not what Yoshvei Kronos are. V'yiyah Mutter La... V'yiyah Mutter La Halech L'Dabr L'Tatal Kash. Right, nimsa shloshavash visani karis. But if these people could walk and talk and carry, and here he is lumping all three of them together, you know, as Adam suggested, if you could do all of these things like other days, nimsa shloshavash visani karis, there is no visible halting because you halt from Malacha all the time. You need some way to halt.
I don't understand that.
Hang on, let me just finish the thought. L'fichach shvisa midvar me'elu hi shvisa shava b'chol adam. Now we have a way for everybody to stop, because everybody moves things. U'mevnei dvar me'elu nagu b'isr tiltol. Get it? Nagu b'isr tiltol. Because of that, they got involved in prohibiting handling things. V'asru shlo yitalto adam b'shabas halakele matzarach lem k'moshe yisbo'er. Yes, Jeff.
The third one I didn't understand when I read it last night, because they still have the long time malachas. So even if they're like the leisure class or retired class or something, they still have all these things in Shabbos, the cooking and the board and this and that. So like,
so the Rambam said, maybe you have a cook.
How are they?
Maybe you
eat the rich class, right?
Soup kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, presumably they're wealthy. Otherwise, they're not living very long in this lifestyle. Jerry,
I'm very surprised that we don't have the word kadosh. That's not used. Like, that as a concept, because, you know, that's in the first mention of Shabbos, that's there, and that would be an umbrella for talking and all kinds of other things.
Where's Kadosh?
Lakacho. Lakacho.
Right at the beginning, first ground.
Right. It's an interesting point. My understanding of Kadosh is vague. Right, in Ramban you can drag into this, b'mutterlach, but zochreu al hayayin is not necessarily consistent with your concept of kedusha. If kedusha is halting and refraining, that's not halting and refraining. I don't know. It's an interesting point. And we're dealing with the Rambam in Mishneh Torah here. This is not the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim. This is the Rambam in his work of law. And he's extemporizing on the value of what Muktzah accomplishes. And his third explanation here is simply, we need to make sure everyone's going to stop doing something. So here it is. This is what everybody is going to stop doing.
You die maskonios.
Yes.
Your hands connect you to the environment. You're always moving.
Yes.
Is that because the Rambam agrees with Tishkos of the Ramban or something?
So I think this is very, very similar. I had that in my notes, that that I think he is. It sounds to me like he's very much in line with the Ramban on Vayikra Chav Gimel Chav Dalet, which is where the Ramban does this Shabbaton Shavuos discussion. It sounds to me an awful lot like they're on the same page.
Wouldn't that answer the question from before, from Malachas? You could say you can't do Malacha, but that doesn't necessarily make it a positive change, a way that you're positively doing something different to indicate that it's a different kind of day.
And therefore
you need things where you're changing the way that you behave, because that's Kiyum of Tishbos.
You're changing tea, you make tea different. That's...
Theory, if you don't make tea,
that you don't do. If I didn't do any of them, then
I don't move.
Could be. So the big question that everyone asks when they read this Rambam is, what happened to the Gemara? Right, the Gemara said it's lest you do hotzah. Wasn't that simple? These are all nice and beautiful, but what are you doing, Rambam? So the Magid Mishnah offers two answers. I brought it here in Tesvav. I'll say it outside. The Magid Mishnah answers two ways. His first answer is that the Rambam thought that was the only from the beginning. The initial gezerah that they made of don't handle all the kalim was because of hotzah, but then they rolled it back. So now you need other reasons in order to maintain whatever remains within the Muktzah rules. It would be a joke to say at this point that the rules of Muktzah are Mishum Hotzah. Because there's so much that's not. So he gives you these other, he gives you these other explanations. That's one. The other explanation in the Magid Mishnah, that last line, is simply that. The Rambam is adding. He's not denying the existence of the Gemara's reason, but he's giving you additional reasons as well. Fine. Regarding
that last line, there's a different girsa. That if you do hotzah, you're by definition doing tilting.
Right, well that's part of the question in general. I mean, I wasn't so sold on the Ravid's read of that of the Gemara altogether. But everybody else seems to be, so I just sort of felt quiet about it. But
when we started Erevin, we also read, yeah. I think we're Rosenzweig's read of this Gemara.
Yeah.
And Darko Kodesh is that the Isser Hotzah is the D'oraisa version of Mukta. Right? The Hashem, you know, the reason that's one of the Malachos is the same type of idea. It's the Shabbaton of the Malacha.
Right.
That they're on the same continuum, that they're meant to not just prevent what you're doing, but constrain your, you know, where you're going, what you're doing. Like, it's much more inclusive in that sense.
Right.
Maybe that's why even though the Malacha grew up.
Well, that was exactly the point. Is that it's...
Yeah.
Nehemiah, though, did more restrictions of Mukta than we have today.
Yes.
So which kind of, I don't know what they were, though, but...
Right, so we're going to talk about that.
What categories were they going?
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. It's going to really fit more in the following weeks, but this will fit in right now in just a minute. The Ramban gives you one last justification for Mukta, and in the Machamos, in Source Tezayin, he says, V'chol ikur lo dibru chachamim b'mukta, ala k'dei sheyivror v'yazmin la'atzmo tzachav me'erev yom tov. He says, the chachamim spoke about Mukta, so that you would do everything you have to do to get ready from before yom tov. V'lo, he's in Beitzas, he's talking yom tov. V'lo, yitztarech l'machar l'achzor v'lechoch b'se'uda, and then you have to go get your suda together tomorrow, shema yavo l'asas b'malacha, u'tiltu l'asurin lo, v'samchul l'mikra b'heichinu. So that's another explanation for it. This seems to be like the Gemara's concern that you might violate Isurim. Right? This seems to fit within that. I brought you in Yud Zayin just a link to an article that I found useful. Rabbi Aryeh, I assume he pronounced it Wassertheil or something along those lines. But I found his formulation of this very helpful. So in case it's useful for anybody, it's there. It's a clickable link in your in the PDF that you have. Last bit within this introduction of the origins of Mukta, when was the Derabbanan of Mukta instituted? So the Gemara we already saw about Nehemiah seems to say Nehemiah's day, beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, or a couple of generations in the second Beis HaMikdash, depending on how you read Nehemiah. Even if it's rooted in a biblical concept, that's when it starts. If so, asks the Aruch HaShulchan, who gave you the right to repeal what Nehemiah did? What do you mean Nehemiah said Asur and you said Mutter? Who are you kidding? Nehemiah is based in, as the Aruch HaShulchan knows, includes Chagai, Zechariah, Malach, and that can't include all three of them. But you know what we're saying? Like, what kind of a game are you playing? So.
To do what?
Sorry? No, I mean, it includes right Nevi'im, Nehemiah.
So Nehemiah. Maybe.
So that's the question, is what's going on? So Tosfos in Bava Kama Tzadidal Amud Beis already addressed this point in discussing Gezeros that get repealed in general, and he theorizes that the Gezerah was meant only for Nehemiah's time. That's what I brought you in Source Yud Ches. It was only for Nehemiah's time. And that's the answer Aruch HaShulchan gives as well in Source Yud Tes. He says, Lo isa gezeras kvuos ledoros. It wasn't something that was established for all time, and he quotes you the Tosas in Bava Kama. V'lochein achar kakasharo shechazu lizor b'shabbos, achshur dari. They saw that people were more careful about Shabbos observance, so mission accomplished. Then he too, v'chazu v'itiru, ad shenishur kfiyadina makodmim ukfiya alacha etzleinu. And that's how you ended up with what we have as the laws of Mukta on Shabbos. The problem with this idea is the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Source Chaf. David HaMelech dies on Shabbos, and Shlomo sends a message to the Beis Medrash. Abba Meis, Umuto Bechama, he says, my father's body is lying out in the sun. The dogs are hungry, God forbid they could end up doing stuff to the body. Ma'asa, what should I do? And they gave him an etza, an etza for how he could move the body. Right, I said before about Kavod HaMeis, that's this Gemara. So, I don't understand. David and Shlomo are long before Nehemiah. Who cared about moving the body? There was no issue of Mukta. Just because we have like 12 minutes left, so I'm going to move on this. So the Shulchan Aruch HaRav offers an idea which is going to spark our last section. And Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, Nehemiah only added certain things. And Jeffrey, this is what I meant when I said we're going to address your question of what Nehemiah did. In Source Chaf Aleph, Shulchan Aruch HaRav writes, Kol minei ochlin umashkin hamutarim b'Shabbos, v'chol minei sfarim shemutar likros bohem, foods that are mutar on Shabbos, books you're allowed to read. Books you're not allowed to read are a separate discussion. Mutar l'taltalam afilu shalol l'tzarech klal. He says you're allowed to handle them on Shabbos even if you're not using them right now, he says, Lefishalo Gazru Bnei Nechemya Ella Al Kalim. The decree that Nechemya made was Kalim specifically, Klishamachta Leisr. Velo Al Ochlim Usfarim. It was not, and Klishamachta Leheter potentially also. But not food, not books. Books not a Kli according to him. Varein Achshav Kmo Kodem Akzera. They're like they were before the Gzera should be made Nechemya. Sorry, Kodem Akzera should be Nechemya. Shayim Mutu Latalo called Dover Haroi Bishabas Afishalo Tzaraklal. Aval Dover She'eno Roi B'Shabbos, but something that has no use on Shabbos. That was my first category, right? If you remember our outline, Nolad items or items that are Machmas Isser, those types of items. I also Tato Af be made David and Shlomo Kodem Lachain. Those go back to David and Shlomo, and maybe, and obviously earlier, or Shlomo wouldn't have known of it. But he says what Nechemya was doing was only regarding Kalim, Muktzah Machmas Isser, that or Muktzah Machmas Gufo has no function. Those precede Nechemya. The Shulchan Aruch Harav did not invent this idea. We find this already in the Ritva and Source Chav base. I'm jumping to the part that I bolded. He says, "De kelim shemalachdam leisur lo midi mitza muktza nagu bahem leisur ela tiltol husha asu gzera mishamotza." He comes up with a very interesting distinction, which matters a great deal. He says, "A kli shemalachdam leisur is not muktza at all. Kli shemalachdam leisur is not muktza at all. Rather, there is a gzera against moving it on Shabbos, lest you transport things." When the Gemara said Tilbul Mishum Hotza, that was talking about Klisha Malachto Leisr, as opposed to Muktzah items, which are Muktzah Machmas Gufo, it has no function, that's a completely separate thing. That's a different story altogether. So Nechemya's Gezerah is Kalim, it's a Gezerah by moving Kalim, and there's a separate issue of not handling Muktzah items. Clear? That's a very interesting distinction that the Ritva is willing to make, and it basically means that you have two different classes. One is Muktzah and one is something else, and we just tend to jumble them together. So that's what I wanted to discuss with our last 10 minutes here, our last 8 minutes and change, is the Gzeira of Muktzah one Gzeira, or are there two different things going on in this topic? So the Shulchan Aruch Harav we've now seen, the Ritva we've now seen, that there are two different Gezeros. The Chasam Sofer says the same thing in his in Chav Gimel, writing on the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Beis. So he notes the business of David HaMelech and the question of can you move David HaMelech, and he says that also there was an older Gezerah and there was a newer Gezerah. The Muktzah Adayin Lo Gazu Ad Nechemya Ben Chakalia B'Shas Gezeras Kalim. You can see it there. I'm not actually going to read through the whole Chasam Sofer, but you can see it. You can see it as well. This makes sense. The idea that there are two different gezeros going on, because after all, the Gemara in Shabbos Mem Dalid Mem Hay has that machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon regarding Muktzah, right? And there, Rabbi Shimon, who said I don't hold from Muktzah, agreed that Muktzah does apply to grogros v'tzimukim, right? Grogros v'tzimukim, the figs that you put out to dry. Right, but they're not going to be used until they dry, the grapes that you want to turn into raisins. Rabbi Shimon agrees that those items have been rejected from use. That's separate from whatever it is that he is discussing with Rabbi Yehuda in terms of Muktzah on Mem Dalet. The fact that Kuf Chav Gimel gives us Nechemya's Gezerah specifically regarding Kalim sounds like Kalim are one thing, useless items are another. They're really two different things. And the logic behind the Isurim could be different for each. Muktzah has no function, you don't expect to use it. Kli Shemacha Isser is under a Gezerah for Hotzah. Right? You can give that kind of distinction and thereby satisfy the Rambam and the Gemara as well. And the idea of separate Gezeros exists even among those who don't put them into different time periods, who don't say this was from then and this is from then. The Ritva that we saw in Chav Beis doesn't necessarily believe that these are in separate time periods. The Ramban, I brought you in Source Chavav. What did I do with the Rama there? I know what I did with the Rama. Sorry, this should be flipped. But do the Ramban in Chavav and then we'll come back to the Rama. The Ramban writes, Malachto le'isser, Klish Malach le'isser, Kevin de lesbe mishum haktsoe le'isser malachto go remeslo. It's not about muktzah, it's about the isser malacha that causes it. So Kol's mentioned Mishamish Heter Mutter. That's why Klisha Malachto Leiser could be moved if you're going to use it for a permitted purpose. Then the Gra that I bring you in Chav Zayin is commenting on the Ramah that I have here in Chav Hey. They're talking about a Muktzah item that has been picked up permissively. What's the rule? If I have a Muktzah item that I picked up Beheter, so do I have to put it down right away once it's muktzah, or do I can I move it to wherever I want to go? Right, practical case: you have a graf shalrei, you have something that's disgusting, it's bothering you where it is, so you pick it up. Do you have to now put it down the moment you get to an area where it could be put down, or do you have the freedom to move it wherever you like? So the Ramah writes in Chaf Hei, Umudr l'taltal ha'izem ala achara mila tzniel b'chatzar ma'urav. He says you're allowed to pick up the mila knife after the bris mila in order to put it away in a safe place in an area where there is an eruv, so you can handle it there. I'm not dealing with hotza right now. Even though you don't have another bris mila to do on Shabbos, because it wasn't muktzah ben hashmashos, so he does the mila and then he moves the knife. He doesn't throw the knife down right away. So writes the Ramah. The Gra says in Chav Zayin, Mashkasav Ma'aril should tzarech lizrok miyado hadinimo. The Ma'aril says no, you have to drop the knife right away after the bris mila. He's right. Ve'alfa gav the gabe malachto le'iser k'shematato l'tzarech makomo mudr lahatzniyo. Granted that a klisha malachto le'iser, when you're moving it for the sake of using its space, you can then put it away wherever you like. Kan asur. That's not true for this mila knife.
This one, yes.
But therefore it's not the same thing. So the Gra says that there's a practical application of splitting the Isurim. If I'm going to say that Gzeres Tiltul Kalim is different from Muktzah, I may end up saying also that if you're dealing with a Kli Shemlachto Leisur that you picked up for a permitted purpose, you can move it wherever you want. But if it's an item that's mukta machmas gufa, mukta inherently mukta, then it's a different story. Not everybody buys into this idea. The Tosus Rid does not buy into this idea. In Source Chavches, he clearly lumps together davar shemalachto leisur and generic mukta items as well. The Aruch HaShulchan lumps them together in discussing Rabbi Shimon in Source Chavches. He does not make any distinction between them. He lumps them all together under Shvus. And then in Lamed, the Aruch HaShabbos says, or Shmuel Orbach says, he thinks the Rambam's language indicates that he views them as one gezera also. That's in Lamed. I retained the Shlita just that we would be able to distinguish between Rosh Shlomo Zalman and Rav Shmuel. Correct, that's what I'm saying. I retain the Shlita, because otherwise you read this and you could think he means Rosh Shlomo Zalman. But he says he learned from Shmuel Arbach, from the Rambam, it seems like they're one Gezerah, even though there's good reason to want to make this distinction. Once he describes the distinction, once you look at it that way, you think, oh, that sounds interesting. But according to that, the rationale for all of them is simply Shabbaton or Gezerahs or whatever you want to say. One other nafkamina potentially between these two categories. If you're going to distinguish between Kalim and other types of Muktzah, would be a Kli that's mostly used for Isser, but it has a Heter function as well. So I brought this for you from the Aruch HaShabbos in Lamed Aleph. He says, the question of a Kli which is mostly used for Isser, right? Think scissors, for example. Right? He says that status will depend on how we look at what the gzera is. Dim ninko shegzera zulmi chlal isra mukta. If you put klisha malachto leisra under mukta in general, the kemen shemalachto leisra ain shimusho matsui va'ada mesiach daito mimenu. So mukta means something that you don't normally have a use for on Shabbos, and therefore you decided I wasn't going to use it. As I'm established, the kliza shemuad gamu mlechas heter ainu mukta klave in lo isra. Well, this has a permitted use. So you ask me before Shabbos, I don't think this is muktzah. I think if the permitted use comes up, I'm going to use it. But if it's a specific gezerah of don't move a kli shemalach leisur, so I might say, well, the majority of its use is as a kli shemalach leisur, and therefore it's in the category of the gezerah. It's not about whether it's muktzah, I have no use for it. It's about whether it's called a kli shemalach leisur. And then he quotes Shmuel Arbach to say that even the Gra will say that it's actually Asur anyway because of concern lest you do the Malacha HaAsura. So he can't, after saying this could be a nafkamina, he cancels out the nafkamina anyway. He says everyone's going to say usur anyway. But it was an interesting point. So what we have is a general overview that I hope was helpful of types of muktzah, some of the terminology we're going to see, how muktzah is conferred. The origin of the laws of muktzah may have some biblical roots. You have Psachim on Bechinu Eseshayaviyu. You have the idea of Shabbaton Shavuos. You have the Chasim Sofer and the Nitziv who want to split muktzah and say part of it may be Deo Raisa. Eating it may be Deo Raisa, for example. Or the Nolad form may be Deo Raisa. But generally speaking, we treat muktzah as a class, as a Derabanan, whether it's to prevent Hotzah, whether it's for the Rambam's three reasons, whether it's for Ramban about lest you perform Yisurim with them. Even though the Gemara traces it to Nechemiah, clearly something has to precede Nechemiah, as seen regarding David HaMelech. And we have the possibility of splitting Muktzah into two parts, one being the Kalim, and one being the rest of the Muktzah item. So God willing, next week, Rabbi Ziering will offer a conceptual introduction.